This is a special edition of the 69 podcast, brought to you with the support of ScreenFeed. It's the audio from a recent online roundtable that was too good to not get out there in different formats. As vaccination rates climb and we can seriously look at getting back to some normals in our daily lives, there's a lot of discussion happening around what consumers will expect and accept in terms of personalized digital marketing. Things like appointment-based shopping and personalization grew more prevalent because of lockdowns and necessary pivots by brands, and consumers are now somewhat conditioned to services that are more tuned to their needs. But at the same time, there are still lots of concerns about things like being tracked in some way by technologies. We talked about all this on a recent roundtable panel organized by Advocates for Connected Experiences, or ACE, an umbrella organization that involves numerous industry associations and bodies that touch on advertising, retail, marketing, and design. I moderated the session and noted how great it was that the gender balance was completely off, with one guy and a bunch of super smart women. My panelists included Kim Cerubi, who chairs ACE, Debbie Howes of Retail Touchpoints, Kim Frank of Geopath, Sabelle Jones of SCGD, Beth Warren of CRI, Laura Davis-Taylor of InReality, and Stephanie Gutnick, now of Verizon Media.
Hello, everyone. Again, thanks for joining ACE, Advocates for Connected Experiences. Today, we're going to be talking about how digital out of home is addressing the consumer demand for personalized content. And we have some amazing people on the call, and I'm going to dish it off to Dave in a second, and we could go around and introduce ourselves. First, I'm Kim Cerubi. I'm chairwoman of ACE, only for one more month, because after this, Laura Davis-Taylor is going to be taking over as chairwoman of ACE, and I will go into my retirement home. And but I'll still be around doing and helping this cause. So I'm going to dish it off to Dave, and Dave, you could introduce ourselves. He's going to be moderating for us today.
All right. Hi, everybody. I'm Dave Haynes. I write a blog called 69 about digital signage. I've been doing that since the dawn of man. And I also do a lot of end user consulting and vendor consulting for a lot of different companies in the ecosystem. I also do a lot of moderating. And this is quite interesting. Quite often, if I get involved in these things, there's a real concern around gender balance. And it's usually completely the opposite. So this is quite cool. So with that, maybe I'll just ask everybody to introduce themselves and start with Stephanie Gutnick.
Sure. Thanks, Dave. Stephanie Gutnick. I was previously the Vice President of Digital Strategy and Programmatic Sales at Outfront. I'm starting a new job on Monday, so watch this space.
Ooh, Laura Davis.
Hi, Laura Davis-Taylor. I am on the Executive Board of Digital Signage Federation, just joined the board with the Retail Design Institute Southeast, and obviously involved in this as well. With all my free time. and really love this topic because it affects so many different channels and it affects so much about where we're going with stores, media, and customer experience design, but also media evaluation, which I'm so happy Stephanie's on for.
Sabelle Jones.
Hi, I'm Sabelle Jones. I'm CEO of SCGD, which is the Society of Experienced Graphic Designers. And we are a multidisciplinary global society of over 2,000 members focused on experiences that connect people to place.
Great. Beth Warren, who needs to turn her mic on?
Mic is on. And I'm Beth Warren. Thank you, Dave. I am SVP of Marketing and oversee our retail practice at a digital signage company called Creative Realities. And we help bring all kinds of spaces and places to life with anything intelligent, responsive, and aware. Great. And I'm also on the board, along with Dave, of DSF.
Yes, I forgot to mention that. Yes. And Debbie House.
Hi. I think I'm the only one who's not hyper-focused on digital marketing, but I am the executive director of content for Retail Touchpoints, which is part of Emerald Expositions. And my main priorities these days is getting the agenda and speakers all set for the Retail X event, which is set to be probably one of the first live large retail events in 2021 or since the beginning of 2020. Check out retailx.com to see what's going on. We're also planning our Retail Touchpoints Retail Innovation Conference for October this year. So lots of fun things going on. Excited to possibly see people in person again.
Yeah. So when is the event, Debbie?
Retail X is set for August 24th and 25th at McCormick Place in Chicago.
Who knows what it'll be like by then. Hopefully, hell, a lot of people will be vaccinated and we'll be doing these sorts of things. That's the plan, right?
Yeah.
So we're talking about personalized content in digital out of home and elsewhere. And I think it would be useful to set a baseline on this and kind of explore what you mean or how we define personalized content. I'm going to go to Laura.
So that's a really loaded topic because we've got where it's been in the world of cookies and where it's going in this cookie-less world that we're facing. And this conversation on when we talk about personalizing means that's relevant to me, whether it's relevant to me attached to me as my name or me as a number that has some type of tracking against it so I can make sure that something's relevant to me. That's two different things. I think it's most about contextual meaning, but that's really what we're trying to unpack here is how do we get there and what does the entire public see as personalized and the tools we're using to make it as relevant as possible. Does that make sense?
Yeah, does personalization really need to get down to the level of individuals or is it more of a categorization?
That's a good question. So let's look at other digital apertures and what we consider personalized. When we're on mobile marketing, when we're on websites, I think we as consumers have been trained for the messages I'm getting and the products and the recommendations and the content, if I'm signed into something, are meaningful to my likes and dislikes and preferences, right? So I look at it that way. Mm-hmm. And so we start to get into digital out of home. What I'm seeing, at least from some of the recent research, is people are saying, hey, I'm going to like you more and I like this experience more. I'm going to love shopping here and I'm going to like being in this venue if the content's meaningful to me. And I really like it, these other digital apertures. So, hey, hit me up. But then you see on the privacy side, we're getting more and more weird about privacy laws and things like that. And then you tandem that in with what's starting to happen with like Walmart Connect and Target and Walgreens and CVS starting to become an environmental media. And how do we balance this topic on personalization and meaning?
Beth?
Well, I think that brick and mortar has been notoriously slow on personalization. It really has. And now that we have this advent of the miraculous mobile apps, it has given retailers an opportunity to really home in and behave in a more personalized way. As you would expect if you were interacting with a retailer at home. So I am really looking forward to retailers being able to provide more targeted, more meaningful, more individualized messages inside of their brick and mortar that are A, relevant and B, contextual, and also really sort of borrow from past behavior to inform what somebody might want or need in that shopping occasion at that point in time. So I think at least for retail, that is going to be sort of the next in what retailers will be both offering and will need to do because people, their expectations have been raised as such.
Debbie, you spend all your time talking to retailers and people who supply into retail. What's their point of view on this?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked me that because I kind of wanted to share a perspective from the retailer's point of view because just in general, in the past, individualized personalization has been so intimidating for the retailers. And on a high level, you ask the question, does it have to be one-on-one? One-on-one is definitely the goal, the end goal, but it doesn't have to be one-on-one to be successful today. It can be, in a segment of a particular type of consumer, demographic of consumer, and still be effective. It can't be so general that, it can't be a batch and blast type thing or so general that you are getting it wrong, but it doesn't have to be, individualized to one-on-one. Now, with everything that's happened with COVID and and what we're looking at with what's going to happen moving forward. The retailers that are still in business and successful on the brick and mortar side have had to embrace digital, and just as Beth was talking about. And so they're, you know, the smart ones, again, that, you know, haven't gone bankrupt or had to close all of their stores, are embracing digital and are realizing the benefits of it. So you know, those who are going to be successful moving forward are definitely, you know, going to be moving in that direction, with the idea that, you know, one-on-one would be, you know, awesome, but we can still do it right, without getting to that level.
I'm curious, Stephanie, in the digital out-of-home sector, there's been talk for more than a decade now about using analytics and computer vision to do real-time triggering of content based on who's in front of the screen. And I've always wondered whether this has actually translated into real-world usage, or is it something that just keeps being sold and touted but not adopted? Where are we at?
It's a good question, and I might start by prefacing that ultimately, I think where we're headed, at least from a digital out-of-home perspective, but overall in the media landscape, is the changes that are being implemented by, say, Apple and Google in terms of the third-party cookies being removed. That is coming down to consent and education. And we're seeing the same thing also being put in place by the laws such as GDPR in Europe, CCPA, the California Consumer Privacy Act in California. Other states are adopting the same. It's consent and education. So it's not like anybody involved is trying to say, hey, we're going to remove the ability to personalize advertising in the digital or digital out of home space. It really is, let's make sure that we're giving consumers the opportunity for them to say, okay, yeah, like I want to be targeted with something that's more relevant to me. And also their ability to be educated on what exactly does this mean if I am going to accept and say, okay, which aspects of my data are going to be used and how. So I think that's what we're getting to, which is really healthy in the overall scheme of marketing. It makes consumers who opt in that much more involved, and it makes those who wish to, you know, not have anything to do with it. Okay, so then don't complain if the ad isn't relevant to you. It's one of those things. So everybody's happy at the end of the day. And then Dave, to your point, you know, going back to everybody being happy. Yeah, you know what? We are seeing in certain verticals where it's relevant, if there is that camera-based kind of, I don't want to say facial recognition because we're not identifying who the person is.
Detection.
Exactly. Understanding the demographics, you know, age, gender. There definitely are advertisers globally who buy into this, and the ad will change to make, whether it's a retailer, the whatever they're selling, more attractive or relatable to whoever's looking. So that is happening. And again, it kind of goes back to contextual in this case, instead of the Minority Report. Hey, your name specifically, this is what you haven't bought, and it's time that you know, buy it again. So that's probably in this sweet spot about what's working.
But is this a bit like apps where if you have a smartphone app, you're trying to build up usage in it, and the problem is you only get 10% or 15% of the people who have the app opt in, or they actually download, or just whatever it is. You don't get the high percentage that you really want because you're requiring this opt-in.
I mean, there are tests being done right now before everything falls into place in terms of these new restrictions or regulations being put in place to see what the opt-in looks like. From what I'm seeing, nobody's going to really know 100% until it actually happens. But we'll see. Again, even if it's a smaller fraction, if it is people who are that much more engaged, then you will see a greater amount of either brand loyalty or at least awareness and some form of engagement. So it'll be interesting to see where this takes us, but I do think it's a positive step forward for both the consumers and the advertisers.
I wanted to just add something to this.
I was about to say you were doing one of these.
I got something to say. Well, I come from, ad supported networks, and really the juice has to be worth the squeeze because all this technology has a hefty price tag. And so even when I'm looking at, okay, we want to get all of this information, you know, our brands willing to pay more to have that information. And our experience has been, they still want to pay the same amount, but they just want more information. So it puts us in an interesting position, because when you start layering all the different kinds of technology we have to put into it, it becomes extremely expensive for us to support it. So just something to think about, you know, when we're talking about this, we'd love for it to be personalized or contextual and all of that, but the juice has to be worth the squeeze.
Mm-hmm. It's also happening.
I'd love to add on to that, Dave, because it's one of the things that we're really wrestling with is the value model. Because one of the things that I personally find most frustrating is that the industry for years has followed a billboard mentality for valuation and measurement. It's CPM, you know, I mean, it's like, it's the cost per thousand and let's get reach and frequency out there. And even looking at it from the perspective of, no, we don't really need to measure everything because, you know, we'll have this rate card. But there's no other digital marketing out there that doesn't have measurement at every single touch point except for our industry. And I feel like it's because we came from billboards. And Stephanie, I'd love for you to speak to this, because I mean, I'm personally wrestling with, like, what model should we follow? How do we move the industry into a value-based advertising model? How do we start to follow a connected TV or a cost per click model versus this blasted CPM thing? And if we stick into programmatic, we're really going to be at a low CPM. So I'd love to hear some thoughts from the group on that. Looking at you, Stephanie.
there was a lot there that I'd love to unpack. And, okay. You know, as you know, I'm doing a doctorate on digital out of home and CTV. So you kind of put together my two favorite subjects and really like what those media synergies look like between the two. And I think it all comes down to what the advertiser hopes to get out of their campaign. Everybody has different marketing goals. Oftentimes, you know, marketers will just stick with what's been working. And out of home is one of those channels that doesn't always get the attention that maybe it deserves just because people aren't aware. But with linear TV kind of descending in terms of cord cutters and cord nevers opting for subscription-based connected TV models, you know, advertisers are starting to look and say, hey, how are we going to reach these kind of mass audiences that we're no longer attaining through a simple, let's just put it through TV type strategy? So out of home does offer inherently just big numbers. And what that means from a CPM perspective, well, again, that kind of depends on what the strategy is. So, you know, there are advertisers who say, I just want to reach a mass audience. And this is kind of my target market. These are the locations that I want to run in, and I just want to boost brand awareness. Let's just run for a month, a couple months, I'm good. And if that's the case, great. You know, out of home can certainly help with that. And the only really measurement that we need to provide is an accurate depiction of impressions delivered. And then if we go further, you know, down the sales funnel, that's when we can start looking at, you know, brand awareness. If you want to measure, let's talk about maybe the surveys that we can put in place from an out-of-home perspective. Moving down, if it's footfall at specific retailers or what have you, there's ways to measure that as well. All the way down to, you know, purchase intent, which, or, you know, the actual sale. And if the marketer, if it's an agency, if they're working with the actual client and can gain access to sales data, there are ways to connect that as well. So there's solutions in digital out of home that didn't exist even just a couple of years ago. But again, it comes down to anybody working within the channel. It's on us to make sure that all advertisers are aware that this is available to them.
So Bill, I wanted to get you in because I'm curious about your perspective with SEGD. You guys are all about experience design and you know, kind of setting the tone for different environments. How does things like tracking and kind of following the visitors around resonate with people like architects and space designers who might, I'm thinking they're probably worried that this has a detrimental impact on what they're trying to realize?
I think we have different perspectives, depending on where you're coming from. And it's interesting listening to the conversation. And I think what Stephanie, you were saying, because in the last 2 days, I've had conversations with designers, one in-house for a major, very cool boutique brand that launched, had, you know, in-person brick and mortar stores, then went into Whole Foods, just happened, the timing was COVID. And now they're rethinking their brick and mortar because they've done so well. But they understand that the importance of place and that personalization of that personal connection to the brand. I think what's happened is that relationships with brands and organizations have evolved during COVID, and people do have a different personal connection. Now, when we go out of home, we really need to build on that relationship. So the other individual I talked to is a digital designer, and he works for luxury brands. Now, the good news from both of these people is they said that digital and personalization and retail, for them, they're booming. It's great. And these luxury brands are realizing that they have an opportunity. They've built maybe a different relationship. They've expanded their audience during COVID, where more people are online and they're shopping. Now, whatever they're creating in that in-person experience out of home needs to enrich that narrative, right? So it's going to continue a narrative in a different way that really motivates me to have that personalized in-person experience versus what I can do at home. So I think we're going to see a huge separation in design. And Dave, I would say what I'm trying to do is actually amplify this conversation, because architects, people in traditional cultural places like museums, I don't think they appreciate the advantage that they can do to monetize this, to make it more special, to differentiate themselves in the marketplace. The ones that do, I think, are going to get ahead. The ones that don't, I think, are going to get lost.
So how does all that happen right now when you've got museums and attractions, retail, and the out-of-home industry in general having a really rough 2020, and some of them just hanging on by their fingernails, or as Debbie mentioned, a lot of retailers just haven't made it. You would think they're pretty freaked out about what's happened and what the next year looks like. You start coming at them with all these ideas around personalization and layering in new elements of technology. Are they just kind of going like this right now?
Well, it's interesting because the people who get it tend to be, now you have people with the title experience, chief experience officer, even at things like museums, and they get it. The problem are, the boards. The problem are some of the investors, and they aren't sure, going back to that ROI, if they invest in it, what are they delivering? So I think there is some risk adversity, but from the people that I know really get it, they realize it's the only way to stay in the game. And I think it will be, ultimately you'll get on board with this personalization and that digital connection, or you're going to have to compete.
Yeah. And I would just add that, the good news is that because of the lockdown, consumers are much more comfortable with digital now.
Yeah.
And I think that retailers from the top down are realizing that they can now engage digitally more with consumers who are more comfortable with it. And so it is a step forward for those, again, who have been, proactive, innovative, and are still in business, because the consumers are more comfortable now.
I think they expect it. And to be honest, when there's no friction, right? And then you go in and you experience friction, that's frustrating. That's really frustrating. And that sets consumers back in terms of their belief and their trust and their enjoyment of how digital is meant to work, which is meant to be seamless. And it's really meant to deliver that element of, you know me, so why aren't you serving me up content, offers, experiences that I'm telling you and I've shown you that I want and need. Mm-hmm. So I think the risk is that if you don't get it right, number one, you fall behind, but number two, you lose your audience base because there's so many wonderful offerings out there.
The other problem also is for, and always with brick and mortar retail, is that they have priorities, right? And so, just made me think about, what did a lot of the retailers have to implement? Lots of supply chain innovations, buy online, pick up in store, and all of those different priorities, maybe pushing some of these other things, digital personalization, behind. And we've seen that over the years, forever with retail, something innovative that we all think all retailers should be implementing. And it's 10 years until, we see it throughout a good portion of the industry, but they did have to pivot very quickly with some of these other things in order to stay in business.
Well, they had to weave legacy systems in order to enable those types of things, which is Herculean.
I'm curious, Debbie, do you think that some of these new announcements about the against Doors Media is going to start a trend in the industry? Because there's about 6 major brands out there right now. We're starting to hear some buzz coming from the UK and some of their big retail brands. Do you think that's finally getting ready to hit? Like, are you guys hearing buzz about that? Because it ties directly into this topic.
About which announcements?
They're starting to, like, Walmart Connect and all these different retailers, Walgreens, CVS, who are now, I'm hearing buzz about some grocery brands in town, or I'm sorry, in the country. We're saying now, like, it's beyond shopper marketing, kind of modeled after Amazon. We have an ecosystem in which we have all this reach and frequency, and you can reach everybody everywhere, including our stores. And we're starting to put more screens in. Yeah. Saw some awesome, awesome interactive end caps with CVS that look like they're permanent. Are you hearing anything about that?
Yeah, and that's how this happens in the retail industry. It'll be the large, leaders, right? Like Target, like Walmart, the CVSs of the world and Walgreens, who will implement these things and show the results. And that's when everyone else will say, hey, I have to do this. I don't have any choice now. I have to do this. And so that's just traditionally and typically in the retail industry, and probably lots of other industries as well, how things happen. The leaders, make the initial investments. It will then become more affordable for others down the road. Once Target and Walmart get through it. Absolutely.
Yeah, we've certainly seen that in the QSR industry as a good example of. There have been vendors selling outdoor drive-through displays for years and years and years. But when McDonald's decided, okay, we're doing this, and they did 10,000 franchises with digital display in the drive-through area, that compelled a lot of other companies to follow along. Because if McDonald's is doing it, it must make sense. And McDonald's was, lucky, or maybe they knew something, but. Or could sense something that they, had they not had drive-through this pandemic, they would have been in a world of pain like a lot of other QSRs are, because they don't operate that way. Okay. Go ahead, Sabelle.
I was just going to say, I think it's interesting because, going to people's capacity and comfort, we're kind of being trained. Right. So, and I think that's where it's interesting of how it's, whether it's retail, whether it's F&B, whether it's branded environments, whether it's cultural institutions, we're being trained as individuals to interact in a different way. And so whether that institution or organization can afford it or thinks it's the right thing to do, people are going to come to expect it. And I think their tolerance is a lot greater if what they get in return is better for them, if it expedites the experience, if it makes it more meaningful to them, if the narrative is engaging and relevant, they're willing to give up some of their personal information. And so it is interesting because I think all of these different platforms begin to merge, whether it's a digital piece at McDonald's, whether it's a digital piece in a museum, whether it's at the airport, people are going to expect some level of that concierge customization.
So I have a perfect story to illustrate that. And again, it's like, I'm coming from a place where, I have a CVS loyalty card, right? And at CES in 2019, one of them. I was sick, unfortunately, like a lot of people, you get a cold just from running around too often. And so I stopped at a few CVSs on the strip buying, you know, vitamins, cold medication. And after a few purchases, I got an email from them being like, get better. And here's a coupon for, you know, a free can of soup or a free box of tissue. And so some people would say, I don't like this at all. You're looking into my transaction history and arriving at, you know, an idea of what my situation is. It may or may not be true. I was like, my mom's not here to take care of me. I'll for sure buy it. You know, thank you so much, CVS, for caring. So it's like, yeah, that's what it comes down to. I loved that experience and I continue to be, you know, loyal to the retailer because of that. And they've done a really good job, I believe, of just using data in an online / brick and mortar fashion that kind of diffuses any line between the two and just makes it very convenient for the consumer. So that worked great for me, but I can only speak for myself on that.
But that supports brand purpose.
Right.
So CVS has, if you look probably at their equity pyramid, care would probably be at the top. So how does data enable the purpose that we want to serve to consumers? And they took that risk, if you will, minor or as major as some people might think, to be able to demonstrate care in a way that you didn't anticipate, but that was subtle, but anticipatory. And that made a good impression on you. So that was an excellent example of demonstrating of brand purpose, which we like to see, especially those of us in retail, when everything is just always the same and very homogenized.
I think there's something really beautiful if it's done with the right intention.
That's right.
There's this democratization. So imagine you're a parent who has a child that's on the spectrum. You know, if you came to a restaurant or a retail or museum and it knew that about you, it could customize experiences to you and your family, or if you have small children, or if you're pregnant, or, you know, so I think, you know, used in the right way, it's going to create a kinder, gentler, like CVS being Stephanie's mom, you know, it's when it's, you know, being used and you just see that the motivation is purely the sell. But I think to enhance that experience and really understand you and be able to adapt to your needs is great.
Yeah, I was going to say, you would think the magic of Stephanie's experience was the tone, the fact that, you know, it was, you know, hope you get better, that sort of thing, where you can imagine if this was all being done by coders and programmers, that wouldn't be there. It would just be like, she bought these things, so boom, let's nail her.
Think about how personal that is. That's so empathetic. It felt like somebody out there actually is plugging into what's going on here. And that's authentic and has to be authentic in order for it to make that kind of impact.
Is this stuff complicated to do?
Yes.
I don't think it is as complicated as we think. I think it's rules engine based.
It's getting better.
It's getting better.
It's complicated to get it right. You know,
it's easy to get it wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I keep thinking of these examples that most of us know from the past where, you know, parents found out their daughter was pregnant.
Yes.
Because of retargeting, right? And when she didn't want them to know, or some, you know, some, there have been lots of examples like that. And so you have to be really careful with when you're doing that kind of retargeting. Because these days, as we know, right, consumers are getting more and more impatient. And we've been talking about that. You get it wrong once and you've lost them. And so it is hard. It is hard.
And it's different if you have a huge budget, right? You know, not everybody's McDonald's or Walmart or Target. And so when you're saying you want to do it on some level, there's a lot of opportunity for mistakes. And it's just, you have to be, I kind of feel like it's almost like you have to be all in or just don't even bother.
Yeah.
And follow the right models. I mean, I get frustrated that we don't look at the past more for the model and not having to repeat past mistakes. Like, we went there with this exact topic with online when it emerged. And we went there with mobile when it emerged. And that's why these conversations are so good, because crossing across the kind of industry verticals and saying, like, what do we not want to repeat? What technology is out there now, particularly now that we've got stronger edge processing, we've got 5G more, you know, available. We have IoT tools that are, I think, could get us to the right place if we get our heads in the right space. And what someone just brought up, having, I think there's you, Dave, the CX person leading the conversation, because I go back to like almost 20 years ago when one of my dear friends, John Greening, he's a head of integrated marketing at Northwestern, I first brought him into this conversation and the digital out of home and all this stuff. And he said, well, all of you guys just need to put your headspace in the right place, which is get out of find me, sell me, and into know me and help me. Because if you know people and help them, what you put in front of them is going to be valued and it's going to be well received. If it's well received, you can monetize it, whether through sales, for media, for retention, whatever. I don't care. But what people like, they will typically embrace. You can monetize. What they don't like, they will typically find a way to revolt around. Like, that's just stupid simple, but how come we don't really?
You know why, Laura? Because marketing organizations aren't aligned to that quite yet, because marketing organizations are siloed and they're built around a mass media model first and foremost, or a discipline model versus a CX model. So the old term of integrated marketing has now been replaced with CX, which is great. Mm-hmm. But I want to see even more breaking down of the budget barriers that exist at our clients, so that the digital and the omni-channel and the retail and the brand and the content, all of that is one functional team, so that we don't have this continuous fragmentation, which only drives conversations like this as an outcome.
Yeah. We're not at the omni-channel hasn't happened in a lot of organizations.
Omni-channel has not happened. They think it has happened, or they put it in an omni-channel group because it's technical and they need people to focus on the technical stuff. Yeah. But the strategic imperatives don't necessarily cross over. And I mean, being a client service person in agencies for my entire career, and now with, well, past 8 years with Creative Realities, I've only seen this come to life even more so. Formerly, I was a partner. Now I'm just a mere vendor. And us vendors really experience that when we're trying to get something done on behalf of one group, right? And we need the alignment of all to be able to bring that to life. Just for mere fact that it's CapEx versus OpEx and things like that, you know? Heads nodding. So we all experience that. That's a real tough, still a tough part of our jobs.
Yeah. I think also, like, coming from a publisher, media owner side, and the digital out-of-home space, as well as a tech provider side, like, the onus, I think, is on the out-of-home industry to make it easy for access and purchase of these displays. So that buyers can actually tap into more of an omni-channel approach. Up until relatively recently, it was difficult to buy digital out of home. You typically have to go through a specialist agency that maybe, if you're new to out of home, you've never worked with before. The language is different. You know, you're buying a screen for a certain amount of time and it wasn't measured in CPM. It was just you're paying a flat rate for a board, and you have no idea how to compare that to your investments in other channels. So, you know, for the advertisers and marketers, like, yeah, you know, who wants to deal with that? But now, you know, especially if we're looking at the US and Canada, Open Direct, which is a protocol for purchasing that's used in digital media, that's being put in place by publishers in the out-of-home space. And OpenRTB, which is, you know, real-time bidding and programmatic, that's also gained a lot of momentum. So, you know, I definitely agree there's so much progress to be made for actually truly becoming omni-channel in a marketing approach. But it's, you know, the onus is very much on the publishers and technology to make that, you know, at least open the door to that being able to happen, which, you know, it is for sure 2020 expedited this.
I'm for you, Stephanie, is anybody kind of leading that conversation from a lobbying perspective with the government to make sure that we're not handed edicts versus helping them understand what the industry is trying to do and why around privacy and even like censors, you know? What we're allowed to do, of course, there's an issue in the United States with different states, as we talked about, but again, I'm already seeing some noise coming out of Europe that they're starting to get weird about AI even. So on top of GDPR, now it's AI. Where do you think that should be and is?
I mean, I think that should be and is with the OAAA, so the Outdoor Advertising Association of America. They're very much the ones who, you know, are in DC and New York and making sure that everybody in politics is very much aware of what goes on. And the same thing can be said about Calm in Canada, for example. So there are associations in place. And even in terms of just public knowledge, you know, there was a time when in shopping malls, there were some issues with consumers recognizing that cameras were in place, along with screens. Dave's nodding because we're all aware, like, you know, a few of us are on the board for the Digital Signage Federation, and the DSF stepped up to say, okay, like, how do we educate everybody involved about the right way to name this and to explain it so that from public perception and any rules that follow, everybody can be making decisions that are based on fact.
Yeah, I was curious in the some of the planning for this session, some of the verbiage I saw was suggesting that cookies are moving out of the mainstream, cookies are going by the wayside and all that. And I wondered, are the technologies that are being applied now just cookies by another name, or are they something different?
There are so many potential alternatives to the third-party cookies. And so again, there's first-party cookies, which are inherent to a publisher's website, for example, or the media that they own. And then there's third-party, which happens when you jump from publisher to publisher. So, you know, like the shoe ad that will follow you around, even if you've already bought the pair of shoes. So I think that's what we'll see, you know, a reduction in. Sorry, what was your question?
in the physical world, what are the things that are being used? So in bricks
and mortar. Oh, yeah, sorry, the alternative. So there are going to be some email-based approaches, you know, if you give your consent and following the email address, and, you know, there's conversation about what does this solve, what stays the same. And then there's a lot of really like contextual approaches that are also being devised that look at cohorts of people who demonstrate similar behaviors online and then buying into those cohorts. So TBD, but I think, you know, ProHaska Consulting just yesterday or the day before released like 80 solutions that are currently in the running right now to help solve.
And Laura, your company does a lot of defining, and I don't want to say tracking, but characterizing audiences. What do you guys do?
Mm-hmm. So we're really looking at the different options for the sensors, and it's really the buckets of camera or non-camera. Really is. And it's got to tie to what data analytics are you looking for. I think we've united this year, at least around, no matter what you do, you need to get to traffic, dwell, impressions if you can, engagement if you can, conversion if you can, so that we're threading through all the different digital channels. You can track that journey point in the venue, right? Now, you can't do some of things like age and gender related personalization without a camera, unless you're tracking against something like a mobile sensor where you're attaching some type of personal information. So that's, you can do that anonymously through people like Blue Fox and things like that, but you know, you're be giving up some things. We're also looking at like LiDAR, the new type of sensor coming out of Israel, which is, it actually measures a human body's water. It was originally started for medical diagnostics. And that's an interesting one because there's no possible way you can get to PI, but you can still get to presence and you can still get to behaviors and you can still get to dwell and things like that. So we're trying to be pretty agnostic, saying we can do the camera, we can do other things and just stick to those pieces of data, but watching it carefully because it just feels like it's a moving target. And it's really like, you don't want to be married to one thing. If all of a sudden something gets handed down from like, I know the Safe Data Act has been on the floor in the US for quite a while, which is saying we're going to follow CCPA as the model. And it's pretty restrictive. And you know, we're spooking some of the legal guys, you know, you don't want to make an investment in technology that could all of a sudden be handed down as you're not allowed to do it. Like I was just writing down as we were talking, okay, so if it's about permission and it's about making sure that we're asking, how do you do that with a camera? How do you opt out with a camera? you probably can't. Does that go away if you're using a sensor where the face could never possibly be retained? And you know, I think we need to keep tracking this as an industry, but stay focused on, we gotta have this analytics at every point of installation, because this is a dang digital marketing aperture. And why would we be the only digital marketing tool in the toolbox that has no analytics data and the ability to optimize against that? Just doesn't make any sense.
So if I'm a medium-sized company and I'm listening to this conversation and I'm thinking I need to do analytics, I understand the argument that we need to get into this and so on, I'm probably also thinking, do I really want to stick my hand in the blender right now? Because we don't really know where this is all going. And if I start something, maybe I have to call my lawyers at some point. So what's the response?
I mean, right now, there's nothing restricting it. And I think that, I mean, even 20 years ago, I remember doing a thing with a whole group with Popeye when it was in existence on what do we do if we're using cameras and venues. And I think we're following what we saw with Samsung 837. You notify we're using cameras to make sure your experience is as optimal as possible. We are not holding on to any data or personal information. Please contact the manager if you have any concerns. And I've personally done that for a long time, but never had a complaint. You know, and it's the chicken and the egg. I think before COVID, there was more sensitivities. We start using cameras everywhere and we're kind of used to it now, but we got to take temperatures, we do other things. It feels like there's a lot less sensitivity. And as we train people that with it, I can get that, you know, beauty cream that's going to be for me as, you know, over a certain age versus the teenager, that is well received. And I start to go, oh, this is great. I think we're just moving along and having to be very reactive, responsive, but also proactive with people like OAAA so that the government and the people understand what and why we're doing and how to make it as optimal as possible for everybody without it being handed down. This was a conversation we had, coffee and controversy, isn't it, Dave? It's the same conversation. It's up to us to help everybody understand what we're doing and why, versus letting the media run it into some crazy Big Brother thing.
And politicize it.
And politicize it, Beth. Yes.
And to build on that too, you know, if it's a small, medium business that's operating in our space, you know, you've everybody on this discussion forum right now would be very happy to, you know, pick up a phone and have a quick conversation about the business model and their realities, maybe make some introductions so that the company can research some options that might work best for them, you know? So there's associations in place and people, you know, like us who can help guide. So it's not like you're blindly picking something and placing all of your money on a certain horse that you know nothing about. There's ways to help guide people to make the best decision for what we know right now.
I was just going to add back to Sabelle's point. You do, for us, we're a medium-sized business, but we do have a board and we have investors. And at the end of the day, they don't get it, right? And so you're trying to educate a lot of people who think that they know better. So it is an uphill battle and it's a lot of money to invest. And I think as more companies start doing it and they're seeing, oh, you know, this company did it, that company did it, it will come along. And Laura, to your point, you said about, you know, as we get older, we want the beauty cream, but I really think it was more about the comfortable bras that we were looking for. That was really what we were looking for in personalization.
Dave is red now. There he goes. Check please.
No, but I wanted to say something more because it didn't even dawn on me. I mean, actually, the museum industry has been using tracking. We've used it through RFID. People do have to opt in for their kids, but it allows guest services to go if there's congestion. It allows them to track what are the most popular experiences, where people, what's their dwell time, how are they moving? It can, you know, lead to spending the money in the right place because you actually know how your audience is behaving. And the other thing that's been happening, and it's funny because I think people have been doing it and nobody really, you know, was worried about it, but also security cameras have begun, you know, companies that I won't name names, but have been offering things just for, you know, potential risk factors that could happen in a place. But then they also realize that they can really get good feedback, you know, through utilizing systems that they already have in place with these security cameras, which can actually, you know, create customized experiences. And you know, in something like COVID, they can actually help because you can see where people are, whether it's, you know, a heat sensitivity of like where people are gathering, or dispersion, or directing people to go to places that are less crowded, right? So there are good things, you know, through these systems, and they've been in use. I think just people, probably the public, isn't very aware that they've been in use. They use them at airports. You know, they use them in concerts for, you know, security and things like that. And, you know,
if think about like Disneyland and Disney World, right? They've been using this kind of technology forever, but they make it engaging and fun for the consumer. So you're getting some kind of entertainment, some kind of use out of it while they're collecting the data. And just the one other point that I was going to make, when we're talking about smaller, medium-sized companies, they need to be buy into test and learn, test and fail, right? So they don't have to make the major investment right away, but they can test some of this stuff so that, you know, if the follow through is that it's going to be legal and you can go forward with it, at least you've had some kind of test in place. You've tried it out. And so you know what's going to work for you. You don't have to make the major investment immediately, but you need to be willing to put a little bit of effort and budget into some of this testing. And you have to be willing to learn and fail in order to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Debbie, a good point. You're right about all that. You brought up Disney. So Disney always, they gave out those wristbands, right? And they were tracking everything. Yeah. But I read an article that they wanted to deploy it in all the other Disney parks in other countries. And they decided they didn't have to because everyone was carrying around their mobile phone. So instead of tracking them with, you know, the wrist, they were like, we know who they are because we were tracking them through their phone. So, you know, we're all carrying phones these days.
Yeah, that's the next, you know, the Wi-Fi sniffers and the LTE sniffers allow sensor tracking in ways that aren't as, let's say, perceived as invasive as a camera, for example. Because there's something about cameras and about your image being captured or bucketed that makes people really uncomfortable. But some way, somehow the phone, it happens every single day with GPS, you know, right? So I'm seeing new news on that front, which I think is going to put the shoulders down and make people a little bit more relaxed when it comes to being able to have to gather helpful data on the aggregate about how people are moving through spaces like retail.
Don't you also think, though, that generationally things have changed? And
yes,
you know,
I do. I absolutely do. Yeah. Yes. And speaking of generations, you know, Gen Z is our largest cohort, and it's our most diverse cohort. White males will be in the minority of Gen Z by 2025. So this is a group that demands personalization. They demand the one-on-one.
And they're not as worried about being
tracked. They're not because they've grown up with this. Yeah. And they don't see the downside. So we're heading there.
Yeah. Or, I mean, there's also the alternative where there's some, you know, research percolating about how Gen Z is actually rejecting certain social media platforms and connectedness, which is also, you know, something that I guess we can only just monitor to see.
That's right. To see that impact on commercial creativity and what that means for us.
Yeah.
It'll be very, very interesting. I have a real belief in this next generation. I do. Our world is going to be very different because of them.
I really do.
You do? Yeah. I hope so. It's really going to be it's very important to us as we age as a group, but also as we advise our clients on how to leverage these insights from this very important audience.
Yeah, and I think there's an interesting point there, which is data that's collected about me, but what's different with the Gen Z is I think they want to be defined by how they want to be defined. So rather than defining me by the data, I want to be defined by my self-identity, my self-identity.
It's interesting.
And what groups I identify with. And I think that's going to be a bit of the pivot, because they don't want to be purely based on their behavior. They want to self-identify.
Well,
and then they want that content.
That tells us that we can't bring old paradigms to segmentation any longer. That if it's self-segmenting, let's say, then that has to be embraced, and marketing needs to create a new prism for that. If we really tap into those, that's, you know, that psychology.
I agree.
Important. Yeah.
Good. I think one. We have our next topic, everybody.
Yeah.
No, that's a great point. I love this next topic. Oh, where's Dave? Where'd Dave go? Can you take a bathroom break? There he is.
Figuring out the most comfortable bra.
Yes. And he's getting used to being a minority.
He's getting used to being a minority. He's in touch with his feminine side.
That sounds like a good place to stop.
That's end scene.
I'm curious about this whole idea of trying to sell this in, and how a lot of the discussion has been around, you know, the marketing side of it. And I've always thought, with all the sensor-based technology and analytics technology, that there's never been enough discussion around the operational side of this. And it was Sabelle or Debbie was talking about heat mapping venues and everything else, and having a better understanding of how a physical space is working, where people are going, how that changes through a day and everything else. Is that something that should be talked about a lot more, in terms of, look, it can do this, but it can also give you so many insights about how your business works and how your audience behaves?
I think it's critical. I mean, I think it's, and, you know, if we can make people feel secure, I think, you know, Beth, that you were saying, you know, the facial identity, but, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to make people safer. It's going to let them have the space to do what they want to do. I mean, there's a lot of pros to it. I just don't know. And I looked to Stephanie, like, are people studying this as a PhD? You know, I know that I've talked with a lot of major technology brands, and they've been doing it for large events. And now, you know, going to Kim's point, they're looking at how they can apply it more cost effectively to kind of like everything. You know, but you're right, Dave, we need to know more of, like, you know, how we share that data, how that data gets used. Mm-hmm. And this is where maybe there's the human touch point, is how does it inform where we do have people, what they do, and how that impact is greater. Because you're going to see less people on the floor of retail, you're going to see less people on the floor of all these things. But when you do have people, if that data can make them better informed to help you, that's a better experience. So I think that tension of, like, don't bother me, I just want to go to the self-checkout, or no, I really need help, you know, when I need a human to engage.
So, Bill, that's a really good point. Beth and I had to immerse ourselves. I'll speak with you here, Beth. We co-keynoted Design Day for Rave, and we had to go so deep into the industry, talking to many of you and others on what are the key trends we need to keep our eye on. And a lot of it was spiraling towards IoT, that all of this is marrying up to IoT, all these trends that are happening. And especially post-COVID, when people are doing more with less, and you've got to do automation. IoT ties to automation, and AI ties to being able to make smart decisions, but also put smarter content. I say smart cheeky with IoT in front of people. So you don't always need humans to make those decisions, but it feels human. Mm. And I think that's a really important point. And it's a point that we made a few points at the keynote, but that was one of them, is as an industry, we need to be thinking in that headspace, because in 10 years, we are going to have responsive spaces. And when we're selling that into a venue owner, it's the bucket of the experience value and the operational value. And there's ROI attached to both, and how you end up with a business case around that is fine. And frankly, you could say a third is the media and advertising value. There's these buckets that are happening with that, but having intelligent spaces is core to it. So we can do more with them, with and without people, and tie that to irrefutable ROI.
Laura, I believe that those spaces are going to be smaller and smaller as our world continues, because it will be more expensive to operate in traditional brick and mortar. And I also think that fulfillment of all kinds is going to be larger and larger. So there, the fulfillment of goods and services, of stuff, is going to overtake the current ratio of footprint and store size, let's say, even entertainment venue size. So as a result, this type of hypersensitive censored technology advantages will help people feel safe when they're in smaller spaces, because I think our industry or our world is going to shift tremendously as e-commerce continues to soar.
Makes sense.
All right, great conversation. We've already lost one of our, we've lost our host.
Gone.
Gone, had to jump to another call, but thank you. That was a great conversation. We'll pick it up again in a month or so with apparently a new topic.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Thank you, everyone. Bye. Awesome. Bye now.
Bye.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 69, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the archive and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of them is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside of Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.